Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for joining us. This episode, we're going to get right into it. I will tell you, last week we had comedian Bill Burr. If you have not heard that, go into the archives and check that out because he was hilarious. So if you like to laugh, need some laughs during this holiday season while you're shopping or, you know, dealing with family, Bill Burr will make it all better for you. So go into the archives and check out the podcast with Bill Burr. This week, I have John Oran from Sports Business Journal and Andrew Marchand from the New York Post to do a 2018 sports media year in review. We cover the biggest sports media stories of the year, go through some things like the worst and best trends. We look ahead to 2019. Like I said, we each gave two of our top stories of the year, and we cover everything that sort of happened in sports media. So hopefully you guys will enjoy the chat. For the people out there listening, when they hear Andrew Marchand, they automatically think we're going to talk about Mike Francesa and his app. That's the last 10 minutes. So if you're here just for that, go all the way down to the last 10 minutes and you'll get that. For everyone else out there, nationally especially, we'll get right into it now with the 2018 Sports Media Review with John Oran and Andrew Marchand. All right, joining me now, two media reporters to review 2018 in sports media. We have John Oran of Sports Business Journal and Andrew Marchand, sports media columnist for the New York Post. Both have been on the ESI Media podcast plenty of times. I thank them for joining me. Fellas, how are you?
Doing great.
Well.
All right. First time we've talked over each other. I will be a good host and avoid that. Now I'll call on you like we're in school so we don't step on each other.
Boog. Test.
So, yeah, I want to get out there and sort of, I feel like, let me give it an overall. Andrew, I'm going to start with you on this one. I feel like 2018 was a less controversial sports media year, I guess, because ESPN sort of toned things down, and I guess there were some other factors, and I thought 2017 was way more volatile. Is that a fair assessment, or you disagree?
Well, I think it depends what you're looking at. I would say politically, 2017 with Jemele Hill and Donald Trump and the whole narrative, at least in our circles, of ESPN being liberal and that impacting their ratings. I think that when you look at 2017, especially off the election in 2016, I think it felt like it impacted the NFL as well with Colin Kaepernick and the TV ratings being down. And it feels like this year it kind of things leveled off politically, probably with, you know, John Skipper's exit. That might have had something to do with it. And ESPN kind of moving in a more, you know, a more center direction, perhaps, politically. Even though I think, let me just add, with Skipper, without Skipper, I think the political thing with ESPN is way overrated in terms of their programming. If you actually watch there and having worked there, you know, I don't think there's some like initiative on the left to infiltrate the programming. However, that was a narrative, and so I do agree with you that 2018 has been a little less rambunctious as compared to 2017.
John, 2017 versus 2018, do you feel like 2018 was calmer, or are we imagining that?
Yeah, a ton calmer. And yeah. Andrew explained sort of what happened at ESPN. I mean, I don't know if Skipper loved the sort of the political talk that happened on social media, but he certainly put up with it in a way that Jimmy Pitaro doesn't. But even beyond that, when was the last time President Trump tweeted about the NFL or tweeted about ESPN? That had to be more than a year ago. And if it happened early on.
No, he tweeted very early in the season, maybe, you know, late August, early September. I think about the ratings, maybe, and then that was it.
Oh, after the first Thursday night game, you're right. But then, if you look at it, it's not just ESPN too. None of the networks are showing the anthem. Nobody sort of focused on the anthem controversy or the protests that are happening around it. So it's just, I think that the networks have been effective in sort of dampening that storyline, right, which was a huge storyline last year.
The last thing I want to discuss right now is the anthem, but I will say it's funny that you point out that the network stopped showing it. They never showed it. They only showed it after the Colin Kaepernick thing, and it became a story. But before that, they never showed it anyway, so all of the people
used to, Jimmy, they used to show it the first weekend from what I understand, from the NFL's behest, that first weekend of the year.
Right. So once out of the first weekend, and then the playoffs, and then in between, nobody cared if someone was standing and putting their hand over their shoulder or wearing a hat or whatever. So,
see, I think in 2017 they did care about that, and then we got sort of rosters and roll calls about who was standing and who was.
Well, and I can tell you why that happened, because we did that, and when we would do that at SI, we'd get big traffic to all those stories that said who was kneeling and who was standing.
So you're part of the problem, Jimmy.
I wasn't. Well, not me specifically, but yes.
No. Yeah, the yes. Royal Sports Illustrated.
Yes,
yeah.
In 2017, yes. Well, listen, it's right there for you. No one ever showed the anthem, and then Kaepernick kneeled. The president went nuts, and then all the networks showed the anthem for a couple of weeks. And then now they don't. Now it's not important again. So, all right, enough about the anthem. I'm not gonna like save the best for last, which is what you're supposed to do when you have a TV show or a podcast. We're gonna do the big one right off the bat. Let's give the listeners the big one right off the bat. The sports media story of the year, 2018. What you think is the most significant sports media story. John, we'll start with you. What do you think it was?
All right, so I'm coming at this from a business reporter's angle. I'm with Sports Business Journal. There's the whole sale of the Fox RSNs, which I think really has the potential to change the way people view their hometown teams, depending on who ends up getting them. But that's almost more of a story for next year. There's a lot of sort of politicking and people trying to figure out what's going on there. So the two I'm going to give to you are the match with Tiger and Phil, mm-hmm. which I thought was a completely new, different and unique way for a big media company to present a sporting event. Usually you would have only seen that like on a weekend afternoon, you know, that sort of stunt. And I think that moving forward, you're going to see a lot more of those, particularly from Turner and AT&T, because even though you know it was pretty much a disaster in terms of making money and they couldn't charge people, they really liked how that came off. They liked the programming around it, and they liked just the image of them being a first mover.
Do we know? And, but before you get to the second one, do we know, because it ended up being a debacle with the technology of it and the streaming, and then they gave it away for free and refunded money to everyone who ordered it. Do we know before that how many people had paid for the match?
We don't have an exact number of how many people paid for the match, but I think it's conservatively speaking, they probably lost about $10 million off that from a gate.
Right, but I'm just curious, if they had no problems, how many people would have ordered that day after Thanksgiving, you know, on a Friday afternoon? But I guess we'll never know.
And I think that's something that's impossible, because once people realized on Twitter that it was free,
right.
I bet a lot of people went to click on it.
Right. All right.
But I think that Turner even was just kind of viewing that as a test. So they wanted to make
absolutely.
Money, of course. Everybody does. But but it was, if they didn't make money, I don't think that they would have, you know, it would have killed their whole business.
All right. And did you have another one you wanted to throw out there?
Yeah, the only other one is Fox selling their entertainment assets to Disney, which sort of created a much more slimmed down Fox, which enabled them to do a Thursday Night Football deal, enabled them to renew a Major League Baseball deal, enabled them to bring the WWE over. I mean, those are three major rights deals that one network that had been shedding its sort of entertainment assets and seemingly getting smaller went into. And it just shows that TV networks especially value these live sports rights, and they're going to pay whatever it takes to keep that within the sort of TV industry. And so the idea of Amazon or Facebook or one of these other companies coming in, they're going to have to go against Fox, whose sole reason for being, and ESPN, their sole reason for being are live sports. So they're going to pay pretty handsomely to try to keep them.
Interesting. That's a good one. And I had WWE as one of the stories I wanted to discuss. All right, Andrew, besides Mike Francesa's $8.99 app, your biggest...
By the way, I'm going to drink every time one of you says Francesa. So thanks, Jimmy.
The over-under on Twitter was 24, so there's one. the sports media story of 2018, Mr. Andrew Marchand.
Well, if you want a local or
no, national.
I know
national.
It's kind of, all right, because locally.
We'll do local a little later, you and I.
It's Mike, if it's local, him coming back. Right. National, I got a couple here for you. Number one is Jimmy Pitaro taking over ESPN. We kind of talked about a little bit the new direction. I just think you look at what they've done. He's put Norby Williamson in charge, and SportsCenter has become more traditional. Their relationship with the NFL has improved, and when you think about it, that the fact that you're paying somebody almost $2 billion and you had to improve the relationship said something about the previous regime. So just a title change, title wave of a change at ESPN, and potentially the direction that it's going, especially with ESPN Plus, that they brought in Pitaro to sort of, even though he's not technically leading it, but to be a big player in trying to make that a success long term. So I think Pitaro, to me, is your number one story of the year. Number two is Peyton Manning and his decision not to go in the Monday Night Football booth and not to go in the Thursday Night Football booth. You know, Manning has been looked at by TV executives as kind of the next big thing. Obviously, that has become Tony Romo, but Peyton could have gone to Monday Night Football. He wasn't getting $10 million, which I know has been reported, but he probably could have gotten seven, and he could have been the face of Monday Night Football. He also could have gone to Thursday night. They wanted him badly, Fox, to lead that package. And if he didn't go now, it's hard to imagine when he would go now. I think it was important to Peyton, and I did report this, that he, who his partner was going to be. At that point, Joe Buck, and he doesn't really have a relationship with Buck, wasn't going to do Thursday night. You know, if it were Mike Tirico, someone who has a relationship, he might have maybe he would have made the jump, but I think Peyton Manning not going into the NFL booth, and because that has a lot of strings with it. Thursday night's a big deal for Fox in terms of trying to make it a premier event, and then of course the Monday Night Football booth has been a point of discussion in media circles all season.
I heard from multiple sources, not one, but multiple sources, that the reason Peyton didn't take the gig is because he didn't want to call games that Eli and Tom Brady played in.
Yeah, I reported the Eli part of it. Since you brought it up, I heard the Brady part. I could not confirm the Brady part, so I only wrote the Eli part. He did do he does that thing on ESPN Plus where he breaks down the film, and he did do an Eli thing, but that's controlled.
Right.
So I don't think, one can be with the other. Here's the thing. If I'm Fox, if I'm ESPN, and he tells me he doesn't want to do an Eli game that's going to be 3 hours of his life, and I get it's Peyton Manning, and they wanted him badly, both things, I would be very hesitant to hire someone who doesn't really think they want to do 3 hours of calling his brother's game. It's not like it'd be 3 hours where everyone's expecting you to criticize your brother.
I would say this. The Eli thing to me is not an issue. First of all, as a viewer, I'm going as a fan and a viewer. Fox, whenever they had the Giant, let's say Peyton took that job, Fox just should not let him do the Giant games. Just don't put him in the booth. Throw in whoever, Charles Davis or whatever, and let him do the game. What is it going to be, one or two games over the course of a season? Fine. If he is going to call the Eli game, I think anyone listening to that knows not to take it seriously. It's his brother calling the game.
Yeah.
The fascinating thing.
Most of these guys don't criticize anybody.
Right. The fascinating thing is the Brady angle. The fact that he didn't want to call Tom Brady games. That's the juicy story there, not Eli.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I'll talk about it here, I guess, but it's one of those too good to be true. And I knew, I didn't have it, so I couldn't write it because it's one of those things that would have blown up and been a huge story. And like I said, I heard it, but I don't know it to be necessarily that was accurate. And I don't know if that was ultimately his decision. I think it was a factor, but I don't know if it was ultimately why he didn't do it. I think he didn't really want to do it. Your heart has to be in it. And the Manning family, they kind of have that sort of, Ron Howard sort of happy days, happy-go-lucky kind of thing going. But they are, you could tell by their decision-making that they're killers when it's time to make decisions with what Eli did in San Diego. Right. And they want things to be perfect. They don't just do things if it's not how they want them to be. So,
but don't you think, and John, I'll go to you. Don't you think, though, it really worked out for the best for Fox? Because, yes, they had to pony up a lot of extra cash for Joe and Troy to do the extra game each week. But when you look at what's gone on with the Monday Night Football booth with the new crew, Fox has not had to deal with any of that by having Buck and Aikman call the games. They've had a very controversial free sort of go at the Thursday night game.
Yeah, there's no sort of learning of the ropes. And Andrew reported this out great when it actually happened. I mean, what I had heard is there was certainly the dalliance there, but he really wants to be involved in the NFL in some manner. And I think he's viewing the John Elway route or maybe trying to get in more into ownership or something along those lines. So, you know, what my understanding is, if he were to come back, it was going to be sort of a short-term thing and nothing that he'd be here for, you know, for decades doing.
Right. With the sports media story of the year, I got two for you guys. I think an obvious one is the NFL ratings resurgence. I said all along throughout the ratings dip that I thought it was because the NFL had peaked at whatever year it was, 2015, 2016, with monster ratings that they couldn't maintain. I thought the dip had to do with that, not anything political. And I think the bounce back this year shows that they've had a tremendous season on the field. I mean, this past Sunday was insane. They've gotten lucky with great games. They've had a lot of good primetime games. And they had to deal with, you know, Peyton Manning leaving. But they've got now, you know, Mahomes. And there's Baker Mayfield. Patriots are still a must-watch every week. Rams offense. They've got the Cowboys back this year. So I think
Bears.
The Bears, absolutely, in a huge market, exactly.
Yeah, the Bears are the most underrated story in the NFL, in my opinion, ratings-wise.
Yeah, so I think the NFL had peaked. The ratings were insane for those years there in the early, 2013, 14, 15. Going to be a natural dip, and now they're back to, they have, the Thursday night game last week, Monday night game last night, I'm sorry, Minnesota-Seattle, I think was lowest Monday night since 2011 or something like that. Those things are going to happen. It was a 3-0 game at halftime, but they've stabilized everything, and I think on the field is what's brought the ratings back, nothing to do with protests and Colin Kaepernick and politics. Andrew, we'll go. Any thoughts on that?
No, I think I agree with you. I think that first off, the reason the ratings, in my opinion, were down, much more so than anything to do with the anthem or anything off the field, were that they had, they flooded the market. Now they still have, but what they've done on Thursday night is that Fox moved some of their better games to Thursday night. Now they've had a couple of stinkers as well, but for the most part, it's usually a good Thursday night game now because they've taken that Sunday window and they said, we're going to do well in that Sunday window, even if it's our number two game, and we'll take it on Thursday. So they put some really strong games on Thursday, and then the league gave them some strong games on Thursday. ESPN got a better schedule and had the behemoth Rams Chiefs game. And so you add it all up, and there's been more buzz, and the ratings every week, CBS is way up. I think people like football or not. Are there some people who were political about it? Maybe. But I would say that you're probably not that big a football fan if you're giving up football because of, an anthem protest. I just don't think that's something that's going to really maybe move some people, but not move that many people not to watch if you're a real diehard football fan.
John, your thoughts on the NFL ratings coming
up? Yeah, I think when the ratings were down, I think there were probably 20 reasons, and I think the anthem protest did play a reason. I mean, I do have some friends that they wanted to quit, and they ended up quitting. They just they didn't like it. But that was one of probably 20 reasons, and you guys went through it, and I think the same reasons hold forth here. I think that they're, you have a really offensive games that bring out better ratings. I think even you can even go down to something like the weather on the East Coast has been in D.C. It was the rainiest November ever. People stay in and they watch television when the weather's not good. That plays a part. So I think even if the ratings were down, say 5%, the NFL ratings are still so much higher than anything else that even like last year's drop or the drop from 2 years ago, it was something worthy of taking a look at, but it wasn't an existential crisis because the NFL is still so popular and so powerful, and every single brand is falling over themselves to try to get involved with it.
The one thing I should say to sort of just tack on to what I had said about, I don't think politics were a factor. I do think the one thing I do think was a factor was the competition from cable news, which since Trump, went into office, the ratings for Fox News, CNN, MSNBC have been all-time records for them. But I think now we've hit the point where there's a lot of Trump, I think in 2016, he first becomes president and, you know, he does something psychotic on a Sunday. People are going to flip over to the cable news to see what he's doing. Now it happens on a daily basis. There's Trump fatigue. You sort of, you know, you're just so saturated by, you know, you realize now he's just deranged and he's going to do crazy things every day. So you don't have to flip over to cable news on a Sunday afternoon. So I do think the cable news put a little bit of a dent maybe in 2017. But I think the fatigue now is here. And that's another factor for the NFL ratings on Sunday being so good.
And if you take a look at the ratings, news network ratings are down this year. So that falls into that reason right there.
My other media story of the year, it's funny. John comes from the business world, so he gave you the RSNs. Andrew wanted to get in there local with the return of Mike Francesa. I'm in the digital world, obviously. I write a column every day for SI.com. So my other sports media story of 2018, I think, is the absolute dominance, and it's digital dominance, by Barstool Sports. Listen, this has been coming for a long time. It's not like 2018 was massively different for them than 2017, but I do think they went to another level. Their podcast network is something to marvel at. They launch one, it goes to number one. You go to iTunes. I mean, the first three are usually, you know, Part of My Take and Spit and Chicklets, which is their hockey podcast. They've got A-Rod now with the Corp, and their hold on, I don't know the range, 18 to 34, 18 to 49, whatever it is. But even if you're as big as ESPN or you're a Fox, you're an SI, I mean, when you see what Barstool, the hold they have on young people. Now, listen, I don't want to get into the content, and I know people have issues with it, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just coming at this from a business perspective. If you're anything but impressed by what they've done from a business standpoint with younger people, and with audio, video, digitally, you're not being fair, because it's dominance at this point. Either of you have?
Yeah, I'll get into the get into the content there for a second. I have a 19-year-old son, and he listens to Pardon My Take, and he samples all that stuff. I think one time Big Cat had retweeted me, right? Or he mentioned me on the podcast.
Right.
And my son thought I was like the coolest person around.
Right.
In a way that like never happens if it's an ESPN talent, or never happens if it's a CBS talent.
Right.
I was on a panel recently at a college campus, Villanova, with Erica Nardini. And it was a business sort of panel. And in the back were all these people wearing Barstool clothing. They had Barstool banners and signs. They ran up afterwards to get her autograph and take selfies with her. There's a hold that Barstool has on young college kids and kids out of college that, frankly, if you're my age, ESPN had on me when I was in college.
And I actually think it expands even to past college. You know, I mean, I work with a bunch of people and who are out of college, and you know, there's a couple of them that are diehards. I think about making money. Well, like you said, merchandise, and they've monetized podcasts, which is not easy to do. They had that thing with ESPN last year. I know ESPN has sort of righted their ship, but my God, if I was ESPN, I would be kicking myself every day to not be in business with the PMT guys, because I think if I'm not, I don't know the exact number. I should know it, and it's a bad job by me. But I'm pretty sure, you know, iTunes came out with the most popular podcast rankings of the year. They were in the top 10, if I'm not mistaken. You know, I don't know the exact. I mean, that is, again, they succeed in pretty much everything they do. So I think it's a very impressive story. Andrew, you have anything on that?
Yeah. Well, when I first got this job, you know, I tried to meet with as many people as possible. And, you know, obviously Barstool had emerged in 11 years. Between when I last did it and then came back. And so I met with Erica Nardini, and she's, you know, you meet with certain people and, you know, sometimes they could have big jobs and you leave, and at least for me, I'm like, yeah, that person doesn't really, you know, they're not really on top of it. She knows what she's doing. I mean, you see how they're changing how they monetize things. It's very, you know, even with the Dave Portnoy's pizza reviews, which are funny and, you know, have a viral ability to them, how they've now created an app, you know, where you can see all the reviews and see the ratings, where, you know, I think over time, you know, could become the go-to app if you're someplace and you want to, you know, find out what pizza to eat. And I just think there's a lot of different ways that they're expanding their business. Now, in my opinion, at this point, they're not really a threat to ESPN or these other places. They're in a different realm. But in terms of their appeal and their audience and their relationship with their audience, it's pretty unmatched. And I think, you know, John made a good point. This was sort of, you know, like ESPN was, you know, back in the day with Berman and others.
Well, I don't think it's a fair comparison even to compare them to ESPN, because I mean, ESPN's a network that airs the NFL, the NBA, MLB. Barstool's not doing that. But
well,
I thought you brought that up earlier. But I'm saying I think they're kicking ESPN's ass when it comes to establishing a brand with young people. I don't think it's even close.
I think Van Pelt's done that, though. I think ESPN, ESPN, because of its, you know, how large it is, it's underrated.
Right.
Because,
if you're a sports fan, I argue with people. If you're a sports fan, you need ESPN. There's no two ways about it. ESPN is part of your life if you're a sports fan. Monday Night Football, MLB playoff game, NBA all the time. You know, the NBA, you know, some dopes on Twitter, I had said this. The NBA Finals air on ABC. I had someone say that's not ESPN. It's ESPN. If you're a sports fan, golf, tennis, you need ESPN. They're always going to be there. So to compare them to anyone, I think, it's a little skewed.
Yeah, but I also think, Jimmy, ESPN's doing some cool stuff about getting younger. I think, like, they have that Sports Center on Snapchat show. I think that, you know, That's also how my son consumes some of the sports news that gets out there. So I don't think ESPN is. ESPN is the best among the networks in terms of getting young.
I would hope so. They have the most money and the most talent. You know, the roster. I'm just saying. Go ahead, Andrew.
I think ESPN, though, because it's the, you know, 10,000-pound gorilla, gets underrated sometimes in terms of their relationship with fans. So, like someone like Stephen A. or Van Pelt. I mean, I could go down. It's a long list, and you look at even like their social media following. Now, I get it, they're at ESPN, so everyone's like, well, of course, you know, Van Pelt has a couple of million Twitter followers, and, you know, Big Cat, who I agree with you, is on the ascension, but, you know, he's not at a million yet. Again, doing great, and is building up from Barstool, but I do think ESPN gets underrated a little bit because they're so big. They're the Yankees, so when they have that, you know, kind of familiarity with their audience or that relationship with their audience, I think it's somewhat underrated because it's a billion-dollar business.
I didn't know you were such a slave to Twitter followers. I didn't know I had Rovell on this podcast. I thought it was Andrew Marshall. Listen, I don't want to fight.
Hold on a second. I didn't look up any of them.
But wait, I just want to say this because this is supposed to be a year-in-review podcast, so I don't want to just argue with
you're
you about.
You're the one taking a left turn. You're the host.
Well, no, you're making bad points because here's what I was going to say.
Oh, God.
I don't know how many followers Big Cat has. It's not about the number of followers. It's about the interaction of your followers and whether your followers will respond to the things that you put out there. Whatever number he has, I guarantee you, is more valuable than almost anyone at ESPN.
I mean, it's like...
It's not about the number.
That statement makes it would have five.
It's not.
You're correct. And it makes no sense.
There are people.
I will say this. Look, I'm not like
Andrew.
Not
there
like
are people. Andrew, there are Andrew, there are people
Big
who have 200,000 followers and can't get anyone to listen to their podcast or get a page view. There are people with 50,000 followers who can. It's not about
the
number.
I'm not arguing, but I think you're taking what I said. Like maybe I didn't explain it well, but you're taking it wrong. I'm not taking anything away from the Barstool guys or Dan Katz. He's doing great. When he tweets something out, it always has thousands of retweets.
All right, that's my point.
Always.
All right,
yes,
we agree.
That's a good point. That's a good point. But I do think, though, like Van Pelt or Stephen A's popularity or other SportsCenter hosts, their popularity, I just think is underrated because you're just, oh, well, it's ESPN.
Again, but Stephen A's popularity is because he's a joke, not because he's – you know,
maybe to you. I don't know. Again, I Stephen A. I think has grown as a broadcaster, and maybe to you he's a joke. But I think that Stephen A. has grown into. And
that's
again,
not a real. That's not a real show. He's not doing like a real. Like it's not.
That's your. But that's what you think.
Well, that's what. If you're saying that's what you think, it's my podcast, though. So that's it.
Okay, but we're talking business, and I think Stephen A. has a real connection with an audience. And for example, if I'm Stephen A., I'm going to my next contract, right? If First Take, if I'm going in there, well, I might leave. Who are you replacing me with? And now, could he be replaced? And could they do just as well with somebody else? Maybe. But you know you can do it as well as they're doing with Stephen A. That's a pretty good place to be.
I think can easily find someone to scream and yell stupid things and, you know, I don't know. John,
there's
do you want
to
let John?
Again, I'm not saying it's let John journalism get, or anything like that.
Let's let John weigh in here with the last word so we can move on. Go ahead, John.
Big Cat has 670,000 Twitter followers. I just checked. And we just talked about how we're not comparing, Barstool to ESPN. They're completely separate things.
Right.
I think ESPN does a really good job of interacting and with young fans. And I think Barstool does as well.
Okay. All right, that was spirited. I liked it. Andrew, we're okay?
That's good.
We're good. Good. You listen, this podcast, there are people who, listen to every single word and then they report back. It's a very, this is an important podcast.
We know in the WFAN studios they are.
They are listening to every word and parsing them.
How many subscribers did you
drink on that? Do I have to drink on WFAN or is it just for Fantastic?
How many subscribers did you report on this podcast? 300? Was that?
Hold on. I'm going to hang up. Unless you say what exactly happened. Now I need.
Andrew never reported that. It was a throwaway line. It was a joke in jest. And someone listening at WFAN told the big guy, and the big guy had big issues with Andrew Marchand. But we're not here for that.
By the way, while we're at it, though, I will say this. Even when we said that, I didn't even say subscribers. If you go back, I said 300 downloads.
Right.
Whatever. Bottom line is.
Yeah, like he knows the difference.
Whatever.
All right. Let's get back to 2018.
Listen closely. That's my advice. Listen closely. Right.
Hello,
I have to start talking about Chad Dukes and Steve Zabin here, down here in D.C.?
Do they have an app for $8.99 a month? Because if not, we're not interested. All right.
Done. Sorry, guys.
Hello, WFAN. We know you're listening. Okay. 2018, best and worst trend of the year in sports media. If I asked you, I'll give you my worst trend. I think the Tiger Phil thing is a horrible thing for sports fans. I think all of these now, Bleacher Report, ESPN, they're going to try to throw as much stuff on there to get as much money from consumers as possible. And fans are being asked to buy too many things. ESPN Plus, the Bleacher Report app, you already have Netflix, you already have Sirius, you already have Hulu, it's too much. The fans are going to get screwed in the end. I think it's a terrible trend. Let's start with Andrew, best and worst trend of 2018.
Let me comment on
go ahead.
What you just said. I mean, first off, I said this for a long time. Like, I hate my cable company just like everyone else does. However, I do think that one day we might miss the bundle, that you have to get everything. The bundle might be better than people realize, that when you start having to understand that ESPN Plus, 20 years from now has has baseball and Bleacher Report has football and whatever it is. You're going to be, I wish I had my bundle.
Totally agree.
Yeah. So I'll comment on that. Let John go. He did more of the homework. I know he sent us a homework sheet. I don't really have a best or worst trend.
Right.
I was doing my job. I didn't have time to figure out what was the best and worst trend. But maybe I'll say something that will spark my mind here.
You guys stole that from me, actually, because I was going to say this whole cord-cutting trend, which seems like it's great. Let's cut the cable cord, is going to make things so much more expensive. And right now you have ESPN Plus, you have BR Live, NBC has NBC Gold, and then you have all these other ones that are starting to launch, and they're all $5-$10 on per month or more, and that's going to become so expensive and so cumbersome to watch. I think all of the problems with the Amazon had the U.S. Open in Britain. And it went so poorly, they had to stop with the comments, because the streaming just is not quite there yet. And if people are expecting to take mass sports that bring big audiences and stream them, 2018 is not the year for that yet.
I just would like to tell the listeners real quick one thing. This was not planned. We did not plan that we'd all have the same answer for the worst trend. It's we all, I guess, hate the court. It's the combination.
Now, I did say my one point, but devil's advocate is it's getting more expensive for the sports fan. Now, you could argue that the non-sports fan who was paying $7 or $8, or John, you probably know the exact number, that ESPN gets every month from every cable subscriber on basic cable, that person's not paying that anymore, so they're getting that money back. And so in theory, they only want Netflix, And so for them, it's getting cheaper. They just cut the cord completely, and it's good for them. So, but for the sports fan, the sports consumer now is going to be asked to handle more of the bundle. And the cumulative effect at some point is the leagues maybe will have to take less money. Now, that's not happening in the near term, I don't believe. I think that the fees are going to go up, you know, and we've already seen that with the latest deals, and I think that will continue. However, at some point, you would think there is going to be a point where maybe the leagues, where that turns, and you know, you can only charge the sportsman so much for his or her sports, and that the leagues might have to take less money. Again, I'm not saying the near term, but at some point, I think that is something the leagues have to be concerned about, and the networks have to as well, in terms of where that pricing is going as compared to what the sports fan can afford.
I don't want to shoot down all your points, but we don't care about the non-sports fan here. I'm only kidding.
Why do you care about Jimmy Trey? Why
they're not listening to the SI
right.
podcast.
Right. Thank you, John. Thank you, John. Relax, Andrew. It's a joke. Relax. Relax. We're having fun. Relax. John, go ahead.
You know, I think that we're actually kind of seeing it already. But the NFL is in no trouble. The NBA is in no trouble. These big leagues are in no trouble. But it's the smaller leagues that don't bring big audiences. That don't, like, if I don't have the Atlantic 10 to pick one out, college conference, you know, that's not going to entice a cable operator to take my channel, you know.
Right.
But if I have the NFL or the NBA, yeah. So I think that these smaller leagues that don't bring big audiences that are at a real risk. And I think it's also some of these bigger leagues, you know, like I'm going to be taking a look at NASCAR. The ratings have been going off the cliff for, you know, what seems like 5-6 years now. You know, next time those rights come up, are they going to get as much as they have been getting? That's going to be the big question to say.
Right. Is there a good trend?
I'm not as fiery as as Marchand here.
Yeah.
I apologize.
It's okay.
I feel like I'm the sober guy.
We were all pretty much. I wanted to kill anyone who told me they ordered that Tiger Phil thing, because I just thought, listen, if these companies see that you're a sucker enough to pay $20 for a fake, made up exhibition event. God knows what they're going to do to us for a real event. You better be careful.
Oh, see, I think that you are the target demo for that, though, because you like to gamble. And once you can just gamble on those shots,
yeah, but,
and just do it literally on the screen in a way you can't do it on broadcast TV, you're going to love it. You're going to be like, yeah, give me more of this.
I don't know if I should be insulted by that. No, I yeah, but
actually,
I
miss a big trend, actually.
I like to gamble on real events, not fake events. It's an exhibition. They're not taking that seriously. They don't care about winning that. What were they getting paid before it was even determined who would win? The winner was getting what? Like $1 million or something?
I think it was like $10 million.
Right. Okay. So $10 million to them is like if we won, you know, $1,000. I don't think
$10 million is a good amount.
Well, who won the thing? I don't even know who ended up winning.
Phil
won.
So you think Tiger went home that night crying? I highly doubt it.
I think he wanted to win ultimately.
I think Tiger was fine without the $10 million. I don't think he's.
You know, we missed one trend though. Can I say one trend?
I don't think he's cutting coupons today. Go ahead. What trend did we miss?
The fact that gambling was, you know, freed in terms of being legalized in more states than Nevada. Now, we're not there yet.
Well, is that a good trend or a bad trend?
Well, for sports media companies, and we're talking about the rights fees, it is going to make sports, in my opinion, if they get the regulation right on a state level, eventually in more states, it will make sports more popular, mm-hmm. and ultimately it will change how we watch sports. And I know you love Brent and you love Al, you know, for how they've mentioned the lines and all that kind of stuff. That will be more in the public eye, you know, 3 to 5 years from now. And I think you look at sports radio, which, Jimmy, we've talked about before. I think that will become a little more gambling-centric potentially in the future. So I do think that's a huge thing that we failed to mention earlier.
John, your thoughts on the sports gambling? And
yeah, I agree. And in fact, you know, when we were talking about the NFL ratings being up, nobody mentioned gambling, which we should have, because it's legalized, and even though it's not, you know, coast to coast, there you can do it in a lot of big markets now. And so that's certainly one of the 20 reasons that ratings are up. And I can tell you that, you know, Andrew can too, every single TV executive or league executive that you talk to about this, they have dollar signs in their eyes, and they see this as just such a huge money-making opportunity for them that they haven't seen in, you know, a new revenue stream like this in decades.
It's amazing how much gambling content all these media companies threw together at the last minute there and ended up launching in the last, you know, couple of months. You know, this wasn't on my list of topics, and I didn't even thought to talk about it, but Andrew mentioned it, and I think you guys are perfect to discuss this, and it sort of fits in. And Andrew mentioned sports talk radio, and I'm not doing this to discuss Mike Francesa, so take a drink. I mentioned him again. But here we are, 2018. We talked about bars.
Really, I hope people really started with some vodka at the beginning of this.
Yeah,
and you're just doing shots, and this is the greatest. They're gonna give you the best. No, but ever.
I'm just curious what you guys think. Here we are, 2018. We talked about Barstool and the digital landscape. Podcasts have become huge. You know, every media company out there is trying to do video and launching these apps with the video, and you know, they all have their fake video numbers that they get from fake traffic on Facebook, and they pump it up like it's real, and it's all not. And I'm just curious, where do we? What is the state of sports talk radio in 2018? Do you think it's a dying medium? Do you think locally it's still something that's needed, that will always be there? John, you mentioned a couple of guys in Washington. At the end of 2018 here, what's your view of sports talk radio in this digital world?
I view sports talk radio similar to the way I view TV. I mean, I think that there is something to be said for live programming that can talk about things that are happening in real time. So, you know, I listen on occasion to like Tony Kornheiser's podcast, and you know, it almost has to be evergreen, right? But if you turn on to, you know, one of those guys like a Chad Dukes or a Francesa, like you're hearing it like right at the time as he's talking. And so I think that, you know, there is value to that. I don't see it I don't see it as necessarily a growth medium, but I don't see it as a dying medium. Right. What do you think, Andrew?
In terms of popularity, at least in the market I work in, sports radio is doing just fine. In the last month of November, Kay and Francesa tied at number one in all of New York radio ratings, and they had 13% of the audience from 3 to 6:30. So I think in the people like us who are in the business, podcasts are, they seem like they should be the next big thing, and it seems like they should be very popular. And like you said about Barstool, have they made them successful? And it seems as if, and I've been told, you know, they're monetizing them very well. That's hard to do because it's sort of like the internet. There's a million podcasts, so to stick out is hard.
Right.
There's generations of people still who really aren't podcast savvy. So podcasts are hard to be successful. The radio still does well and is easily accessible. And to John's point, they're really, you know, there's satellite radio, you know, Sirius, you know, XM, if you listen to the Mad Dog channel, that lineup is very strong, but you're getting a national point of view. I do think sports radio is still best local, at least in the market I'm in. You know, people want to talk about New York sports constantly, especially when there's a big issue, you know, like a big Met or Yankee trade. So I think that it's not going anywhere. As a business, I think it's suffering in the advertising department, just like all the major, you know, newspapers, TV, radio, and the impact of the internet has had on it. But in terms of its popularity, it's still very, very popular, even in a Spotify world.
You both mentioned the immediacy of it, and it is true. I mean, you know, Cowboys have a big game. You know, Lakers get LeBron. The Patriots lose a crazy game. You have to wait for a podcast to cover that, whereas sports talk, you just flip on your radio and boom, it's right there for you. But I would love to know, like when you report out the ratings for radio, Andrew, you mentioned the ratings for Michael Kay and Mike Francesa, you do what, 18 to 49? Is that what it is? Or 18 to what?
It's 25 to 54.
Okay, see, that's a 25. I would love to know the sports talk radio ratings for 18 to 30. Would love to know.
Well, I can't tell you, like 25 to 49. Kay always beats them.
Kay
beats them, and that, you know. So Mike, you know, Francesa's audience is older.
Right.
I mean, that you know, one of the things why Kay is closing in and may beat him in this book is because, you know, Francesa's audience is aging out of the what they rate.
But I'm just saying, compared to podcasts, obviously, sports radio listeners are
I would think
be
it's
older.
I mean, yeah. I don't know that for sure, but yeah, I would think that podcasts in general are younger than sports.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's a pretty
go,
easy
right.
assumption.
Yeah. Is there a media person, TV, radio, podcast, someone on air that you thought had a breakout 2018? Either whoever has one can jump in first. If you have one, throw it out there.
You got one, John? You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll throw out Booger McFarland. I think the Monday night booth has been just killed.
Yeah.
From day one, and he appears to me to be the one guy who is coming out smelling a little bit like a rose.
Is that your opinion or what you've seen from people?
What I've seen, sort of how I've seen people take, people are killing Witten every time he opens his mouth. Joe Tess is love or hate, but Booger McFarland's somebody that people generally want to give him a chance, and people generally, he seems to be working with people, it seems to me.
Is he back on the crane next year?
No chance. He's in the booth. What do you think, Andrew?
I'm going to write a column about it, but I will tell you, I thought the Booger Mobile was a terrible idea from the start. And they presented it as Booger's the third person in the booth, like, you know, third, he's just the co-analyst to Jason Witten, and then you throw him down there. They wanted, their big thing was chemistry, and to me, they made it so it was harder to have chemistry, even when you listen. You know, have they changed? You know, Joe Tess has mellowed out the last 2 weeks, either by his own direction or he was told by execs to do that. And, you know, he's been a mellower guy. I think Witten actually, in my opinion, has improved, you know, as the season has gone on. You know, he's put in a role that he probably – shouldn't have been put in. I think most jobs you have experience before you get the, you know, one of the top jobs. You know, this one you didn't. I understand the circumstances. It may have helped the ESPN with the league, you know, Jerry Jones and stuff. And so, that's a factor. But, and to answer your question, I think Maria Taylor is someone who's made a leap, I think, into that, you know, maybe kind of is on the way up, if you will, between her college football work and, you know, doing some Get Up stuff, and kind of seems as if she may be a star on the rise.
I'll give you, that's a good one for sure. I'll give you a guy I really enjoy on NBA for ESPN, and he does the fill-in on the YES Network here locally on Yankee Games, and that's Ryan Rucco. Keep an eye out on him. I think he's going to become a big, big deal at ESPN. He does the NBA. He's very, very good on play-by-play. He fills in for Michael Kay on the YES Network, and I enjoy his work a lot. And he's a young
man. He's good. Rucco's very good. Yeah. Young. And I'll tell you a story about Rucco. When I was at ESPN, I was at Yankee Stadium one day. He was at Fordham, and they sent it out to me for an update. I did my update for ESPN. Then for WFUV, which is the Fordham station, they sent out to him for an update, and he did his update, and he was sitting next to me, and I looked at him, I said, Ryan, I think you should be doing the updates on ESPN, and I should be doing them on WFUV. So I think so his talent has been apparent for a while.
Yeah.
Let me throw one other
ahead.
Name out there.
Go ahead, yes.
Liam McHugh.
Mm-hmm.
Who, like, it's NBC. So hard for young people to break into, like, a national series, like, especially Sunday Night Football, and I think he's gone on to that desk. He does a lot of things for ESPN. It's hard to think of. He's got to be over 40, I think, and it's hard to think of somebody like that as a young up and comer. But unfortunately,
he looks like 23.
I know, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But I think like he's been able to break in, and I think, like, you know, he's going to be set there for the next several decades, I would think.
I want to ask you guys what you think will happen in 2019. But just, I'm looking here. The big stories of
41. Liam McHugh is 41, by the way.
That's amazing. Look up Rucco's age, too, while you're at it for me. You could be my researcher.
Rucco's like 30.
Researcher and guest at the same time.
I think Ruco's 30. I mean,
that is young. Wow.
I believe. Let me look it up.
We've covered a lot of the stories from 2018 that I wanted to touch on. We've gotten into the Monday Night Football booth, the sports betting, NFL ratings. I'm curious. We mentioned it, but I don't think we went in depth on it. In 2019, you're going to see the WWE on Fox, not FS1, the real Fox channel. It's going to be interesting because they're going to have the Thursday night game on Fox NFL, and then right into SmackDown on Friday nights. Do you know? Is Fox going to put their broadcasters that we know and make them a part of the WWE coverage? I know they've already said stuff about maybe doing a pregame show on FS1 for Friday night SmackDown, but. You know, I think I wrote this in as a joke that they should have like Gus Johnson call WWE matches since he's part of Fox. I don't think that's going to happen. But would you be surprised if we saw some familiar faces from Fox on their WWE coverage, John?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they did like a Joe Buck or like you said.
Right.
But I would think that you're going to have some Fox presence there. I mean, you just mentioned the whole idea. They're going to have a studio show around it. They're really building this up as a major sport that they want to carry Friday nights for them. And I would be shocked if you didn't see a sort of Fox hand or overall the production there.
Did you ever think you'd see the day where a network television that has the NFL, the World Series, the U.S. Open, that they would have WWE SmackDown with a pregame studio show?
Yeah, I mean, look, NBC pioneered this back in the 80s.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised it took so long. That was so hugely popular,
right. And
that's part of the reason why Hulk Hogan was as popular as way back when.
The difference with that, though, is Saturday Night's Main Event aired at 11:30 p.m. on Saturdays. It was a genius plan by, I think it was Dick Ebersol, where on the weeks where Saturday Night Live would be a repeat, they'd have Saturday Night's Main Event, which, and I know the ratings for that were through the roof. Andrew, do you have anything? Anything you want to say about WWE and Fox before I move on to another topic?
No, you can move on. Ruco's 32, by the way.
32. Okay, thank you.
Kids.
I should mention Get Up here because they took a lot of heat.
Ooh, yeah, Get Up.
They took a lot of heat for really bad ratings when they started out, and then Michelle Beadle left the show. After admitting she doesn't watch the NFL, which I'm not sure how that was supposed to work. But so Beadle left Get Up. The NFL season started. And since that happened, those two things, the ratings have been very, very good and have gone up for Get Up. John, anything on Get Up that we should know about for their 2018?
Yeah, I always thought that maniacally following the ratings for a brand new show was silly. I mean, all shows in TV take a while, especially studio shows like that, take a while. People tinker with them.
You're way too nice, John.
He's such a nice guy. I'm trying to get more stories, Andrew. Come on, man.
Go ahead.
I'm not saying anything. I want you two guys to fight. Go ahead.
I'm too nice.
You should be able to interrupt me. It's fine. Go ahead, John.
Look, we all knew as soon as the football season started, especially with Monday Night Football there, that the ratings were going to increase. I think that the show, the show started rough. It's getting a little bit better, and it's still going to get better. I mean, one thing I do know is that they're committed to it, and they're gonna stick with it, for the foreseeable future.
It's more of a SportsCenter show now, right? Is that
it's SportsCenter? Yeah.
Right. Go ahead, Andrew.
It's SportsCenter. It's called Get Up, but it's pronounced.
All right, so now it's your turn. Now it's your turn to be mean.
Yeah, that's my turn. I mean, when you put you have a story where this didn't help them, where they're making the three people are making nearly $15 million.
Oh, that was a killer. Yeah.
That was killer. They, I know, this is something a little inside baseball, but it's like the cool kids get to go to New York and work. You know, everyone else is in Bristol. Now they move more shows there. But, that's something that I think internally probably wasn't, everyone kind of noticed. The fact they did a lot of publicity about it, and, you know, put a lot of eggs in that basket, and they were replacing SportsCenter, I don't think you cannot expect it to have a lot of focus on it and its ratings. The putting together that program was unbelievably terrible, in my opinion. And in terms of the people, like, you know, I talked to so many people before that show would launch in terms of Greenberg and Beadle working, and not one person who, you know, thought that would be a good combination. That just doesn't work. And the biggest thing is they put Michelle Beadle on that show. You know, I reported this after the fact, but that she, you know, they asked her three or four times before, and she kept saying no. And then they offered her, $5 million? And finally she said yes, and that's not her fault. But at some point, if you're John Skipper and you guys are running ESPN, you have to say, well, maybe, yeah, she's going to have to get up at 4 in the morning every day. Maybe this isn't the, you know, best match. And I think also they probably should have gone, you look at what, you know, Good Morning Football has done, your show, Jimmy, mm-hmm. on NFL Network, you know, what they've done is, you know, they built a camaraderie and a show, and I think it would have been much wiser if ESPN had started that show on ESPN2, built it up, and, you know, organically they could have spent a lot less money, and then when it was ready for prime time and critically acclaimed, you don't have to do so much publicity, then move it over into that ESPN slot. I just think that makes a lot more sense than what they've done. Now, can it be successful? Yeah, I know they say they're committed to it. We'll see. I mean, I would be shocked if one day we, you know, heard or, you know, we had a story where, you know, that they switched it to SportsCenter. I mean, that wouldn't shock me. But I think right now they're committed to it, and they'll probably stick with it. But it's basically SportsCenter now. And
so, Andrew, December 31st, 2019, is GetUp still on the air? I say yes.
I say yes.
I'll say yes, just because I want to be a nice guy, yeah. too.
But I will say, I don't think your story got enough attention. It really is an amazing story there that ESPN asked Michelle Beadle 3, 4, 5 times to do the show. She says no. They throw a ridiculous amount of money at her, and then she says yes. And clearly she was miserable doing the show because I guess on her last day, wasn't she tweeting like, you know, hated being, and I shouldn't be facetious because I guess she tweeted like, you know, can't wait to go back to LA. I don't watch the NFL.
She didn't want to do the show. I mean, it was,
right. I mean, it's just, obvious. I don't know who
she
comes
did
out
not
of that.
Want to do the show.
Right. I'm saying, I don't even know who comes out of that looking worse. Her or ESPN. I mean, it's a terrible job by both of them.
Yeah. She didn't want to do the show. I mean, look, I can't blame her if they're throwing $5 million at you. I don't know what she made previously, but that's great money. And so you suck it up for a little bit, but then, you know, she didn't really, I don't think from what I could tell, she didn't want to move from LA to New York. And so it just, the concept of the show, it just didn't really, it just doesn't really work. And I mean, quite honestly, you could say, here you go, get ready to drink, John, give Mike and the Mad Dog, you know, 3 each or 3.5 each and have them yell at each other. And I know maybe people say that wouldn't work nationally. I get a feeling it would work nationally. If the two of them going at each other, I think that would be a better investment than putting three people who don't even know each other that well. That's the biggest issue, too. Right. I just want to say, when you're planning a TV or radio show and you put two people or three people who don't know each other well and you're building a show on chemistry, I think you're asking for trouble. It's mind-boggling that ever happens at that level.
Yeah, I want to emphasize a point that Andrew made, which is, you know, Good Morning Football, they were in relative anonymity for, what was it, 6 months before they started getting a lot of press about all that. So they were able to go through all the hiccups that get up. It was all very public, and really having that story hit with their salaries right before it went on was deadly. It was a killer.
Yeah.
It ensured that there was going to be a bright spotlight on them and everything that they did.
Oh, plus it was a bizarre cast. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to get into saying.
But listen, give Trina credit. Yeah. Trina, I went back. I was doing research for an A-Rod story I had last week, and he had one of his, what was it called, Trina Thoughts, where he was after the upfront, and Trina just said right away, he just panned that show and said it would be a failure.
Wait, what did they do in the upfront?
It was an awful.
Nice guy.
They showed.
They showed.
I'll show you how nice I am. They showed an awful, and I mean awful, video clip of like Beatle and Greenberg in a cab and picking up, who's the third person on the show? I don't even.
Jalen Rose.
Yeah, picking up Jalen Rose. And it was like, you know, Full House meets Seinfeld. It was just, it was really bad. Speaking of really bad, I haven't mentioned FS1. I mean, I don't know. I know John will probably come out strong with a disagreement here. I don't even look at them as competition for ESPN at this point. And I'm talking about during the day. I'm not talking about when they have the MLB playoffs at night or college football. I'm talking about their studio programming. I mean, it's all awful. Nobody really watches it. What's the state of FS1 right now, John?
You want to tell him why he's wrong, or should I?
I know what you're going to say. It's the cheap shows to produce, and they probably sell ads and make money.
Well, John just had a story, and now everyone's texting me, but they love putting in that Sports Business Journalist type of story. Now, John's a great reporter.
Let John take FS1.
Go, John. The fact is, the ratings were better for FS1, and granted, they were helped by the World Cup. And
right. I'm talking about the studio shows.
They've made some ground.
Total day ratings.
What'd you say, John?
I said, yeah, it's total day ratings.
Right,
it comes to studio shows.
Right, so instead of 7 people watching Bayless, 10 people watch him. Okay, I mean.
It's not true, though. I get it, you don't like him, and I can see why. I mean, I ripped Skip Bayless 20 years ago when they changed Cold Pizza the first take.
You're taking this all out of context. It's not. Here's my question. How many people a day watch Skip Bayless's show?
I don't have the numbers exactly, but I think it's somewhere between
like 100.
It's around 200,000.
No, it's not. It's in the
it's more than it was the previous year.
It's like 150,000, 160,000.
I said 200.
Right.
What do you want from me?
Well, accuracy would be nice. I know Donald Trump's president, but I still care about facts.
Oh yeah, now you have Fox Sports going.
I'm just saying.
You reported 200,000.
Okay, so let's say it's 200,000. Let's say I'll give it to you.
It's 150,200. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, this is what Skip Bayless gets paid $7 million a year for, and we're going to call it a success? That's a success? $7 million a year?
I'd have to see what the exact ad rate.
Again,
but I think it probably is a success. Yes, I'd probably say it's probably a success.
All right, John, go ahead.
So here's a stat. For the past 25 years, the most watched cable sports channel was ESPN by far, and the number two was ESPN2 by far.
Right, I got that.
And this year, for the first time ever, the number two one, and this is for total day, not just for prime time.
Right.
So it encompasses everything. Now the number two one is NBC Sports Network, and the number three one is FS1. So, I mean, FS1 is, they are getting some traction, and as people are watching.
Okay, can I ask you a question? Did FS1 air World Cup games during the day this year?
They did air, and that certainly helped out. Yes.
But Jimmy, I don't understand. Your premise is, all right, ESPN2 gets to use every college basketball game,
but
little thing they have.
I'm not comparing FS1 to ESPN2. What I'm saying is this. Do you consider ESPN's daytime programming, not World Cup games, do you consider ESPN's daytime programming a success? Do you hear buzz about them? Are people watching them? Are they driving any kind of discussions? Are they a
ESPN
factor?
Or FS1? You said ESPN.
FS1. FS1.
Okay, FS1. You go, John. You want to go first?
A success? I don't know if it's a success. I don't think it's a failure, though.
Okay.
I think that it's. I think they're doing okay, and I think that.
Can anyone remember anything that has happened on any of those shows outside of Shannon Sharp drinking Hennessy one morning?
Didn't they have LeVar Ball's father on one?
I believe that was 2 years ago, and if it's LeVar Ball, I mean, if you want to count that as quality programming, God bless you.
Yeah, I think FS1, especially Skip, does a remarkable job of being in the discussion for, you know, being a lesser seen show compared to others, you know, in our little
world.
But
again, oh my God.
But I get it. He's trolling. Again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I wouldn't do this as a professional, you know. But you like wrestling. What's the difference? It's wrestling. Yeah. It's not journalism. It's entertainment. He says the exact opposite of what any logical person would think about LeBron James. People go crazy, players react, and he does it again. Is it smart TV? Is he like in some, you know, he's like the most brilliant troll. I mean, I don't, in some regards, I'm not saying
he's like the original troll. Exactly.
Yeah, it's like you said about Barstool, like, you know, we're not getting into the content of it, but is it successful? Yeah, you could argue, I would say, for Fox Sports 1, that Skip Bayless's signing him has been successful.
Well, here's the difference. Here's the difference. Barstool comes right out and says that they are a comedy brand. If Skip Bayless did that, then I'd have no issue with it.
People get too worked up on Skip Bayless. I mean,
he is doing comedy.
Skip's show has to be the most successful show of that afternoon block there, I would think.
Well, I mean, I would hope so. I mean, no one's watching, what is it, Jason Whitlock and who's he with on that other show?
Marcellus Wiley.
Yeah, how many people are watching that show? Let me guess, 200,000.
They are not doing as well.
It's I'm shocked.
75 to 100.
Oh my God. 75,000 people watch that show. Oh my God. And you think FS1 is just fine during the day?
And they're what?
They're just fine during the day?
Yeah, because we love talking about the studio shows. The whole reason for being for those shows are live sports rights.
Right.
And so if you have something in during the day, that costs nothing for Fox to put there. They fire up the studio and put some talent out there, and it eats up hours of the day. And you know, they're hoping to grow it, of course, but it's...
Well, that's not happening.
And here's the other thing, Jimmy, I think that's a little underrated. Again, I'm not saying that Skip Bayless is some, like... you know, one of the great talents of the 21st century. But I will say this, it's not as easy to find people that can do and bring in an audience like that when, you know, who can be so polarizing. Again, I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing or it's art or anything
like that. Completely disagree.
Saying, if you're a TV executive and you're looking to hire people and you look at the whole country, you look at people who are in radio and who are in newspapers.
Completely
and are on TV,
disagree.
And you say, I want to put somebody in there and can bring in that level of people, it's not as easy as
totally,
you think.
Totally disagree. Anyone?
Really? Who? Give me one name.
Doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter who. You get someone on there to say ridiculous shit on a daily basis, and people will go in and react.
But
doesn't matter who's
done
saying
it. For 25 years, and so he has a following of some sort that
right. It's
has
that train,
followed him to Fox
right.
Sports.
It's that train wreck following.
Yeah, and he's going to get another big contract, and he's going to have another show as well. I mean, right. TV executives want that audience.
Right, we're just focusing on that one show, but they have other shows too. I mean, like we said, the Whitlock show, you said 75, whatever. You guys love FS1, you think it's a huge smash, that's fine. You're entitled to that opinion.
that's not what I said. But
ESPN shaking in their boots.
didn't say that.
All right, that's enough about FS1. Let's talk about 2019.
Go ahead.
What's going to be a big story, sports media story, in 2019? Go ahead, John.
All right, I already mentioned that the regional sports network.
Now for someone who's not intelligent like me, how is this? Tell the listeners, like, how does this affect the sports fan on a day-to-day basis?
So, the regional sports networks, they're in 22 markets. So if you're in one of these 22 markets and you follow the your hometown teams. Whoever owns these channels, it's a big deal because it's going to determine whether you subscribe to your cable operator. Maybe you'll subscribe to Amazon if they come in and make a serious bid. Maybe, you know, you'll be streaming it. Maybe, you know, somebody will buy it and the cable operator will drop it and you won't have access to it anymore.
Oof.
I mean, the people that come in, I mean, imagine Yes Network not being available in your home area in the summer.
That happened
one year,
and it was not pleasant.
Yeah, you'd go crazy. Yeah. And just, I think it was a year ago, Comcast dropped Yes Network. And
right,
it was in Jersey and Connecticut, but it was, you know, Yankee territory. And, you know, they didn't put it back on until Fox came with sort of Fox News to say, like, well, you don't put that on, and, you know, we're going to take off Fox News as well. So they were able to sort of jam that in so people could get it. So there are a ton of potential implications. It's a $20 billion deal potentially. So, you know, that doesn't happen every
day. So two questions. So you said it's 22 markets, correct?
Right.
And will it definitely be settled in 2019, or is this something that could drag out?
It will definitely be settled in 2019. Okay. By part of the contract once the Disney Fox deal ends, they have 90 days to make this sale. So, you know, they're really running up against it right now.
And is it going to be something where it's all sort of broken up? Like, let's say, you know, the Yankees buy back.
We don't know.
Okay. Okay.
So, like, it's potential. A company like Sinclair could come in and buy them all.
Okay.
And it's a potential. Like, nobody's going to be able to do that. So then they'll sell it to, you know, team owners or right. you know, some money guys or who knows. That's why this is a fun story.
So there could be a scenario. I'm just throwing out these names hypothetically. They may not even be part of the 22. But let's take baseball for instance. It could be a situation if it's not a group where, you know, the local ABC affiliate buys the Reds and the broadcasts and the you know the local NBC affiliate's buying the Pirates and you have a cable channel buying the Twins. Like it could be something like that as well too, right?
Potentially, except for you have to buy the channels.
The channels.
The rights are tied in.
Right.
The rights are tied in with the
so
channels.
Fox Sports Ohio, Fox Sports. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So if you're buying the Reds, they're in Fox Sports Ohio. You also have to buy the Cavs, and you also have to buy the
right.
Columbus Blue Jackets and get all of that in there.
That's gonna. I guess, that will be wild, I guess, with 22 networks being split up like that.
Yeah, and who knows? There's been you know rumors. Ice Cube has been you know kicking the tires to see if he wants to get in it. So it's a It could go anywhere. It could go everywhere. It could go back to Fox. Who knows? Right. It's going to be a fun story to follow.
All right, Andrew, what do you got for 2019?
This podcast ends at the end of 2019.
Maybe. We haven't even discussed the app yet. So strap
in. I know.
No, give me a 2019.
I don't know. What's the question then?
What's something that is going to happen in sports media in 2019?
Something that's going to happen. Well,
what's going to be a big story? What has the potential to be a big story?
I'll say, you know, Miami Booth will be a big story in terms of what they do there.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be one.
Are they going to change it at all?
I got to save this for the post, but I would say, yeah, they might. I mean, I think they'll change it in some way. I know that some of our brethren took, like, Jay Rothman saying the other day that, like, oh, we're committed to this. I mean, it's the middle of the season. He's not going to say that they're going to blow the whole thing up for next year in the middle of the season. I mean, last year, Stephanie Drewley, you know, did an interview with Richard Deitch on when he was at Sports Illustrated where she said that Sean McDonough was coming back. And then, you know, as we saw, he did not. So we'll see in terms of what they actually do. I'd say Witten does come back, though, probably. I'm not there. Just anybody listening, taking notes, whatever out there, I'm not reporting that. I'm just saying right now I would say he's back. But,
well, he has a contract as well, too. I mean, not that he has
been.
Yeah,
it's a four-year contract.
Yeah.
So for big money,
yeah.
You know, Dallas Morning News reported it's $4.5 to $5.5 million a year. So, I mean, that's a you don't keep him on. I mean, they can have him do other things, you know, but that's a lot of change.
All right. So you think you think there could be a change? There's a chance there could be a change. You think?
Yes, I would say yeah. I definitely think they could. They might blow it up, but I think they give it at least one more year.
Okay,
probably.
All right.
They got to get rid of that Boogermobile. I'd be shocked. I mean, I was shocked they did it in the first place. But if the Boogermobile is back, I mean, that's one of the terrible decisions of all time.
I don't know if the Boogermobile, if the crane will be back. But I would be willing
to... They hate when you call it the crane, by the way, Trina.
Well, what is it?
It's a mobile. It's a boogermobile.
Whatever. If I will bet you... I don't know if he's going to be in the crane or not, but I will bet you...
Bad guy.
Whatever you want to bet, that he's not in the booth next year.
Yeah, he's not in the booth. So
not in the booth.
Booger off.
I don't know if he'll be on the crane. I don't know if he'll be standing a la Tony Siragusa. I don't know if they'll put him on top of a goalpost. I'm just saying...
Why do you say that, Jimmy?
Let's just say, how can I put this without saying what I want to say? Let's just say I've heard rumblings it has to be a two-man booth, in the booth.
Yeah, I've heard that too. But if they go to Witten...
Yeah, I've heard that too.
From multiple people.
Yeah, so have I. I've heard that too, but I get it. But the thing is, sometimes it's a little circular thing. I do think there's some truth to that. There's something there, but at the end of the day... They can say to Jason Witten and his agents, they can say to him, look, we're either taking him off and his broadcasting career is over, he's going to get his money, we're taking him off, or we're going to do a three-man booth and they'll have to make a decision. So, yes, it's in the contract. It could be. It may be. I don't know that 100%, but it may be in the contract. But at the end of the day, you know, those are words on paper, and you can get around them, I think, if you're ESPN. And why you would have put that in the contract also is beyond me.
We gave the people who stuck around to the end a little nugget there.
Yeah, I mean, God bless them. God bless you for you have this on your podcast on. You love sports media.
I'm just saying.
And, you know what? I love you for it because I love sports media too.
I'm just saying.
Let's keep going. Right. Another hour and 20 minutes.
All right. Are there any 2018 stories we didn't touch on from sports media that you think that are worth mentioning? I'll let you guys have the last word here.
John,
you got anything?
We covered it all.
Yeah, I think, let's see, CBS, NBC, Fox. I mean,
We covered it all.
Yeah, we got it all.
All right, I appreciate you guys coming on. I hope you guys had a great 2018. I hope you have a great 2019. Andrew?
Wait, are we not going to talk about Mike? I mean,
this is a national...
People might have listened to this whole thing.
It's a national show. I don't want to bore John with it. He's from Washington. He doesn't care about Mike or his app. I will say, you know, I'm worried...
I am fascinated. Don't from that, D.C. There's no radio guy down here that's anything like Mike Francesa. I mean, he says something, you write it, people click on it. It's phenomenal.
That's why
we have popular radio guys down here.
That's why Bob Raceman named him the sports pope.
I don't get it. I just cannot figure out why he's popular and how he's popular.
He's been around 30 years in New York City. And, you know, he's kind of an institution. I will say.
Yeah, him and Mike and Chris. They're probably the most legendary sports radio duo of all time.
I do worry about Andrew. I worry. Because I think if Michael Kay on ESPN Radio New York, if he ever beats Mike Francesa in a ratings book, I do think that one night, like coming out of the post offices, someone might go up to Andrew with a baseball bat, whack him right in the back of the legs, Galooly style. I do worry about that. Because the big guy was not happy with Andrew Marchand a couple of months ago.
Yeah, because Andrew, you actually went to their office, right?
He got challenged.
Well, what happened was, I was invited down. Mike invited me down.
That was some invitation.
Time out. How did he invite you? Did he pick up the phone?
He invited me down. Well, he thought, he was told that I said something on this podcast, in fact, that I didn't report. I had said that, you know, I had my doubts about how well the app has been doing, but I never reported a number. And even Jimmy asked me after Mike had mentioned it out of nowhere one day, if I had, and I said no, I had never
let me tell John this story really quickly, because if we never covered this post that whole thing, and so I just want to say what happened quickly. I had Andrew on the podcast one week, and we were talking about the app and whether it could be successful, not successful, who knows. And Andrew was saying in a very casual throwaway line about, like, let's say Mike gave up WFAN and he just did his app only for $8.99 a month. Andrew's making the point that it might be tougher to get maybe big name guests or something like that. So as a throwaway line, he said something like, you know, can you imagine trying to get, you know, an NFL coach like Mike McCarthy, you know, if you only have like 300 downloads for your app or something like, you know, so casually like that. Cut to like a week or two later, Mike goes on the radio, and in typical Mike fashion where he's not happy, he's ranting and raving and going nuts about someone reporting, quote, reporting that he has 300 subscribers to his app. So when I heard that, I mean, I cover this stuff. I follow all this. I'm like, I never heard that. I never read that. I never saw that anywhere. I'm like, who the hell reported this? So now a week later, I have Andrew on the podcast again. And I actually said to him, Andrew, who reported this about Francesa? And Andrew's like, I have no idea. Meanwhile, he had said it on my podcast 2 weeks ago as a throwaway line in jest. And someone listening at WFAN, because I don't think Mike listens to podcasts, so I'm going to guess there's a mole at WFAN, listens and monitors for what Andrew and I, are saying about the app, went and told Mike he reported 300, which he never did. It was a throwaway line in jest. Then Mike said someone reported it. We didn't even know. We were like, who reported this? That's how dumbfounded we were by the whole thing. And then Mike went on the air and said... what triggered the one where he called you the weasel and invited you to the show? You did something that day.
You know what? I tweeted out that I had a nice feature coming out on Chris Russo, and so it was right after that. I don't know if that triggered something
And so his invite to you was over the air?
Oh, yeah. He went on a He went on a 10-minute rant. called Andrew a weasel and made fun of his salary, made fun of his status in life. And
said I didn't have any stories that were correct on him.
You call him every day to get quotes. He won't talk to you. You tried to get a job at FAN. You're a failed radio host. You're a weasel. Come down here. And if I don't have...
You seem to be enjoying this a little too much, Jimmy.
Well, I love that it started on my podcast. I'm not going to lie. The SI Media podcast got good publicity that week.
And none of them really were true. Well, not none of them. They weren't true. I mean, I interned at WFAN in 1994, a long time ago.
Again.
Anyways, I've done fine in my career, whatever. The bottom line is I had the story that he was coming back to FAN. I've had a number of stories, you know, because I cover sports media, about Mike that have been accurate. And I think even though I didn't report that, he might have been trying to – dirty the waters in case I had reported anything close to that.
The best part is in that rant against Andrew, then he drops the in that same rant against Andrew, vicious personal attack, then he drops the bombshell and goes, my return hasn't been what I expected. You know, there's a lot of hard feelings here at the station. He was sort of intimating that people there aren't thrilled that he's back. And then he goes, you know, I may have to give up FAN. Or that's what it was, I think. He said on the air that in order to make the app work, like he said that the app and the radio show, because he's asking people to pay $9 a month for an app that is video of the radio show that's free. So he was saying that he's not sure they both can exist at the same time and work together. So,
but he initially said that he came back because he needed to go back to the fan because to start
right.
the app.
So when he said they couldn't work together, a lot of people had assumed that meant he would get rid of the app because who on earth would leave WFAN? It's like the most powerful gig in sports media if you're in the radio business. So everyone assumed he meant the app. And then I think he was pissed about that. And then he went back on the radio and I think he said if he gave up one, it would be FAN, not the app. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's what had happened.
And then he said that thinking that I reported this, which I hadn't reported, that if he had, you know, less than 300 subscribers, he'd donate $10,000, I guess, to me. And then if it was like if he had 800, which is the number he used for himself, over 800, I owed him $10,000. And then that night, I called him and said, let's set this up. And I also tweeted and talked to Mark Chernoff, who's the program director. And so I said I'd come down. And then they said he won $500,000 for the interview. Now, you don't really – to give the amount of subscribers you have for your app, you don't need – there doesn't have to be a charity component or a money component. You can just give it up and we can – there was a perception that he felt. So there's an easy way to clear that up. So I did go down to the studio in New York and – he worked from home that day, so he made this big declaration for me to come down, and then he didn't show up there. And I'm not some tough guy trying to do that. It's just he invited me down, and so I would love to clear it up, you know, either off or on the air.
I don't think he has said anything about it since then. John?
No, he never mentioned it after that.
John, what do you think about the story as the sports?
You know what? I'm Team Marchand, as always, right?
Okay.
Thank you, John.
It would have been great if Mike would have been there.
So is it still sort of in limbo now?
Well, his new thing is I don't listen to the show really that much. I end up just seeing all the clips on Twitter. And his new thing is he's saying that he does not have a signed contract yet with FAN. So he can leave at any moment, I guess.
Do you want me to address that?
Go ahead.
I mean,
Don't get in trouble.
He doesn't have a signed contract. Is he working for free? So he keeps saying that. When he came back, he agreed to take a substantial pay cut.
Be careful.
I understand. He thought he was going to make up that money with the app, which I don't know for sure. Do not know for sure, but I do not think the app is making up the difference. And so the fact that he says he never signed a contract, that very well could be true. But there's still a check coming every week or 2 weeks, however FAN people get paid. And so, yes, he may not have signed a contract, but he had an agreement, at least verbally, because he's not doing the show for free. So the fact that he hasn't signed a contract and now is saying, well, maybe the contract isn't set and we need to keep negotiating, I mean, I believe that's probably more of a ploy to get more money out of Entercom than it is the fact that he never had a contract. That's semantics that this thing happened very quickly. And again, getting back to it, you know, I had the story first, and I called him up, and that was the last time we actually spoke, because I said, are you going back to FAN? And then he paused and then said, I can't say where I'm going. And so You know, that's what happened.
Again, just get that bodyguard.
All right, easy with that, all right? You don't have to give people silly ideas.
No, not I don't people. Just one person.
Oh, you think Mike's coming?
Oh, Mike's coming for you, baby.
All right. It's all in fun. It's sports radio.
And somehow Mike, who doesn't listen to podcasts, somehow knows everything Andrew says on this podcast. That's the best part of it.
Oh, too
funny. Well, he told me how unimportant I was, and he spent a half an hour talking about it.
So that's the full story, John. That's the full story.
That's great. That was well worth it.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. And like I said, I enjoyed the little year in review, and I wish you guys...
Wait, are we doing the... No, are we doing the... two? Is this the... I kind of got lost there. This went so long. Is this the 2019 year in review now?
We'll get to that next year.
Okay. Goodness. Right.
But
well,
I think
half an hour.
I'm trying to wrap up, and you're not letting me.
All right,
I was just going to wish you guys a happy...
Nobody listening. Everyone hung up half an hour ago.
All right, John.
They're on like 4 times speed, yeah.
John, I wish you nothing but a very happy holidays. Enjoy them. And,
same to you, Jimmy. Thanks, man.
Best health and happiness in 2019. Thanks for coming on. All right, bye,
absolutely,
Andrew.
Thanks.
Bye, Andrew.
See you, Jimmy.
All right, take care. All right. That wraps up the 2018 Sports Media Year in Review episode of the SI Media Podcast. I thank you for joining me. We'll still have a new episode next week. We'll be here through the rest of the year, no weeks off, but hopefully you guys enjoyed that look back at the year, and I'll see you next week right here on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.